On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons, and I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons today is Dr. Virgil Rizzo. Dr. Rizzo has got quite a background. He started off as a medical doctor, and then, as if that wasn't enough, he decided that it was time to go on and become a lawyer. And he is now the first ombudsman for Florida condominium owners in Florida. Thank you very much for joining us, Virgil. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hey, good afternoon, Sue. I'm glad to come back again.
Yeah, the last time you were on, you had just started. And now you've had, about a year under your belt?
Well, not quite. I was appointed in December of last year, and I guess it's about 9 months.
Oh, is that all?
It seems like yesterday.
It seems like yesterday. You've been busy.
Nonstop.
Nonstop. How has it been? Tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, it's going along great, Sue. I was a little anxious at the beginning with all the work that had to be performed and policies, procedures, and things that needed to be done as part of the statute that created the job. But it all fell into place, and surprisingly, I'll be issuing a report. I sort of put out a quarterly report every 3 months, and I'll be putting out a quarterly report again shortly at the end of this month. And I think the theme of the report, besides how I spent my summer, which is high school theme, but it's how I spent my money this summer, and also about the progress that the Office of the Ombudsman's made. And surprisingly, we've just about accomplished every aspect that was required of us.
It sounds like you have been highly successful in doing what you've been doing. I'm impressed because I've been reading about you in the papers, and I've been talking to people, and I know that you've got, about a 24-hour turnaround in terms of getting back to people. You have gone in and helped with their problems, and but you've also been inundated with calls, 4,000 in 3 months. Is that
well,
right?
Well, that's calls and emails.
Okay, so that's 4,000 different people with different issues.
Okay. And sometimes callbacks and other, a lot of issues. You know, it's not only phone calls, but it's emails, you know. And by the way, we just recently opened an office in Fort Lauderdale with a local number in Broward County, Florida, which is probably 50% common ownership of the residents here. And the first day the phone number was released, we had over 100 calls.
So that's just day one. One of the articles I read, they interviewed a lady, or they sort of quoted a homeowner who was waiting for you to come to the area or open an office in the area because she could not afford the long-distance call. How many other people do you think there are in the state of Florida who would have contacted you had they not been watching their pennies so carefully?
Well, I think the older people are still reluctant from back in the 40s and 30s to make a long-distance phone call. I mean, it's not that expensive anymore, but it's sort of a mindset. But, you know, what's interesting is that they feel more comfortable with it and that there's a local presence. I have calls from the west coast of Florida saying, does your office in Fort Lauderdale, will we be able to come to your office from the west coast? And the other problem is, Shu, that it hasn't quite reached throughout the state that the office is available.
Why is that?
I think it's mostly with the media. Of course, in most of the condominium activity is in South Florida, in the Tri-County area, West Palm Beach, Broward County, and Miami-Dade County. Most of the activity is here. The other counties do not have that many condominiums, although they're getting there. And they don't really necessarily have the same problems that the people here do, and nor do they have the same attitudes as some of the people in this area. And the media doesn't pass on the information to them that if they do have a problem to contact the ombudsman or pass out the phone number or the email address like it's done here in South Florida.
They don't want them to contact you? Is that...
I really don't know. I just know that we don't have the media exposure up north. But I was surprised this last week there was an article in Volusia County, which takes in Daytona Beach. And we did do some work in Daytona Beach for some condominiums there that the people were very satisfied and pleased, and they notified the newspaper, and the newspaper did an article. I thought it was really a great article.
I probably have that one. Is that the one that was written by Audrey Parente?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah,
I
have that. Yeah, you're right. The people that they did interview seem to be very pleased with what you've done for them.
And the opportunity. And we get accolades every day, you know, but we don't send them to the news media to publish. And people are very, very satisfied and grateful that they have an office to turn to, somebody that they can get a straight answer with.
Let me ask you something. And are you having fun doing this? I mean, I'm sorry to go off on a tangent here, but...
I refuse to answer that question. Yes, you know, it's satisfying. You know, when you get these accolades, it is satisfying to know that we're doing something that people really need and want, and that they're happy with it. Of course, along with that comes the naysayers, you know.
Oh, well, we always have those. And well, there's in this article that you were talking about, there's Ivan Tessier of Marina Point Homeowners Association, who said that he'd been on the board on and off for 18 years, but this is his first time as president. And he said, your assistance made it very clear how things were to be done. I was impressed. I think we learned enough that we don't need his assistance, but from time to time we will call with questions, and he is helpful and assists us with answers. And that seems to be the way people who have come across you or who have, you know, that you have worked with, this seems to be the predominant response that I'm hearing of.
Well, we try hard, you know, and the situation is, you know, we have to educate the individuals that there is a source besides the ombudsman's office. There are books, manuals, statutes, and administrative codes that they need to read, but a lot of people don't, being volunteers, they don't have the time to sit down and read the statute and try to find its true meaning, and it's easy for them just to send me an email and say, does this apply to this situation? You know, and we can help them very readily.
We're talking to Dr. Virgil Rizzo. He is the first ombudsman appointed by the governor of Florida to oversee condominiums and the way they're run and to help assist assist the owners there. You're limited to condominiums, right?
Correct.
And what about no homeowner associations yet?
I'm just getting a handle on the condominiums here. The Homeowners Association is an interesting aspect. And the way I understand it, the legislature is trying to have the Homeowner Association come also into the same realm as the laws that govern condominiums. And that would make uniformity throughout community living, which would help instead of having some divergence for single-family homes in a development as compared to condominiums.
Any idea how many condos there are in Florida?
There, well, you know, the last statistic I heard, it was approximately 16,000, but I'll swear in the last year there's been another 10. I would estimate it's probably up to about 18,000 right now.
Is this in units or in actual
association?
This is just association.
Yeah,
so
there would be over a million, at least. I think the last number was 1,100,000 approximately, and I know that's increased tremendously.
And these are just in condominiums?
Yes, just condominiums.
Any stats for homeowner associations? Not really.
No, I try to stay away from that.
Smart man.
You're not getting me into that.
Do not get you into that. And I guess the same holds true because you also have mobile home parks.
We don't get much of those. You know, that's a small situation, and they have unique rules, and of course they have their own Florida statutes that cover that. Sometime we'll get a question, but a lot of the questions relating to mobile homes are contractual questions, private contracts, which we really can't get involved with.
I remember one out of Florida that I thought was really cute, and that had to do with a guy who decided that the association controlling the mobile home park where he owned and lived was not putting out the truth, and so he came up with the Parrot, which was his newspaper that he put out, and they put out these parrot nests so that the elderly could go and just pick up these newsletters. And that sort of hit the papers, oh, I'm going to say about 4 years ago, maybe, just off the top of my head.
I remember. I thought that was just last year that happened.
You're having too much fun, Virgil.
Okay.
I think it goes back a little bit farther than last
year. Well, time flies.
I know. That's why I say I think it's about 4 years ago, but I have no idea. I didn't realize that you don't. You know, you've been in for almost a year already. I don't know what happened there, but.
Well, I tell you, it was my kitty cat. My kitty cat stepped on the phone.
Do you have an ombudsman for cats? Virgil, in this article, you sort of break down the types of calls that you're getting, except that they're not called complaints. They're called inquiries.
Yeah, that's the general term we use, because there's people that are calling regarding just asking for information, and there's people calling with complaints, We sort of put it in that category, and we hate to use the word complaint because that has a relatively formal meaning. And even though the Division of Condominiums with the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, they have their own classification, and depending on how they classify it, they have a procedure on how it's handled, and sometimes it's handled differently. And we just lump ours into inquiries and then sort them out. And we really don't like to get to the word complaint, because when it's a complaint, it sounds like there's nothing we can do about it. But sometimes.
Well, I guess the reason I'm sort of raising this question is because I've been, you know, for years, every time we've talked about the need for adult supervision in associations, be they condo or homeowners associations, we're told by the industry that, oh, you know what, it's just some inquiries. You've got people who don't really know what they're talking about. And they sort of minimize the fact that there are some real serious problems in associations.
Hey, absolutely. As you, just recently, you know, there was some editorial in the newspaper here that my statistic is skewed and that I don't present it fairly. Well, that's really not my job, is to present it lopsidedly. I just present the facts. But there's no doubt about it that there are some bad apples. Probably most of the condominiums are operated by knowledgeable and well-meaning individuals, but there's a few that are operated only for the purpose of those individuals. And then there's a few that are operated by individuals that do not know how to operate or manage a corporation, and it is a corporation. And they need to be informed, and actually they take care of things in a manner that they think will get the best results, but not necessarily what complies with the statutes, the laws, and people's desires and feelings. And I've equated it just recently to criminal law. You know, we need laws to govern criminals, but most of the people living in the state of Florida are not criminals. There's only a select few, and of course, for those select few, they need some supervision. Likewise, the condominiums that are not run properly, they need supervision.
In the breakdown, in the stats that were provided in this article, I guess they're quoting you as saying that 50% of the inquiries you get have to do with mismanagement. Can you give us a typical example? What's the biggest or the most called about issue? Is there one that sort of jumps out at you?
First, let me clarify. Out of the inquiries, let's put it this way. The large amount of the inquiries, they're not complaints. They're just requests for information on how to handle this thing, how to run a meeting, or how do they handle a certain assessment. Okay, those are not categorized in that. In the category that we have, that there are you would call complaints. Okay, we categorize those, and two of the major categories are mismanagement and abuse. And there's a lot of subcategories under the mismanagement and abuse. Under mismanagement, we did it as general mismanagement and fiscal mismanagement. In fiscal mismanagement, I think people can understand, is that the board of directors do not know how to operate this corporation with good economic and business sense.
And that's a big surprise, isn't it, Rachel?
I think in our last conversation you asked me about a budget. You know, and I said, well, that's the farthest thing from my mind. I don't even have a household budget. And likewise, these directors, they need a budget to run their corporation, and they have no knowledge on how to do it. And even they have no knowledge of how to accept the assistance that's offered by the state and to fall within the guidelines of the Florida statutes to operate a business fiscally sound. And in fact, the big issue came up after the last quarter and says these people need education regarding on how to run a business. The Condominium Business 101, I said, that would be a great course. And I talked to Bill and some of my other staff, and I said, you know, we ought to write a manual for these people on how to run a corporation and just call it Condominium Business 101. And it's not that difficult.
And a lot of it should be intuitive, but apparently it's not.
Well, it's intuitive. But you're looking at three different generations that have different intuitions. I mean, you have some 80-year-old people that their intuitions regarding running a business would be like Mr. Scrooge during Christmas time. And then you have the younger set who, you know, as soon as they get paid, they have to spend the money on certain things. They're really not looking forward to retirement or the future. And then you have the generation in between. I haven't figured out where they're going.
They're probably not going anywhere. they're in between.
They're in between. And then the other aspect is mismanagement as far as taking care of the association, the building, and the duties to keep it up date. And then there's all extremes of that scenario.
No, but I mean, in terms of when I said it's intuitive, I mean, you know that you're collecting money because you're going to have to maintain, repair, replace some of the major structural components. And you know that it's going to cost a lot of money, and you know that it's starting to age, and you know that, you know, you're going to have to do something about it. And yet you have people who just, I mean, I heard about one board who decided he was going to be very magnanimous and fly all his board members, you know, hire a plane and fly them off to someplace for a nice lunch. Would that be okay to use with the you know, with association funds. Wait a minute.
That's fiscal mismanagement.
I mean, that's sheer stupidity. I can understand people saying, well, gee, you know, this board's really worked hard with me, and they've been right, and, you know, they've been great, and we've got a lot done, and I want to be able to sort of reward them in a way. But you don't use association funds to do something like that. So mismanagement, it's fiscal mismanagement, it's mismanagement of the facilities, the structure, right?
Right. And, you know, you assumed one thing, that they have foresight. You can't assume that. They really, you know, if it looks good from the outside, they're satisfied. But if the elevators aren't working, or they're not functioning properly, or the paint's peeling off the wall, or mold is growing up the walls, those they don't seem to look at. And they don't seem to plan ahead, you know, and they don't know when the roof is going to leak or if it is leaking. These are the problems. And people that live there, you know, they complain, but actually nothing gets done. And this is what I mean by general mismanagement. The roof is leaking. Oh, well, geez, that's too bad. And nothing's done. Nothing is done. And it's interesting, we've had some situations where the board members are aware of a serious structural problem, but do not want to do anything because it would require them to specially assess all the unit owners, and they would become then unpopular.
But they're not funding the repairs.
Right, they're not seeking to fund it, right.
They're not.
And of course the unit owners aren't too happy about having to pay a special assessment. And interesting enough, Sue, there was a situation, and it was a high-end condominium on the beach, that they hired an engineer to look through the building. They thought that they had the fiduciary duty, which they do, to keep the structure in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
They hired an engineer, and the engineer comes in and said, well, you only have to do this to bring it up to code or to bring it up to good standard, but if you want to make it excellent, you have to do this. And they chose to assess everybody $75,000 to bring it up to perfect standard.
$75,000?
Yes. And that was only the beginning.
Whoa. That's a lot. That is a tremendous amount. And then we try to tell people that the only way they can afford to buy their own homes is through an association, right? And then we specially assess them $75,000. Now, the other 25%, the 50% was mismanagement. 25% is abuse.
Abuse, yeah.
Arbitrary enforcement, selective enforcement, having board members being arbitrary and capricious. Are there some really serious problems there?
Sure, it gets even up to physical abuse. I mean, these older individuals are feeble, they're weak, you know, and they just get pushed around. And I mean, the ballot shoved under their face and says, sign here. And these poor people, I mean, with authority, they're told to sign, and they just sign it and hope the person will go away.
That kind of
verbal abuse at meetings. I mean, somebody would get up to voice an opinion. Maybe the person would be knowledgeable about a situation that's currently before the board, and that person would like to pass on his expertise, and somebody, board member, says, sit down, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You know, that kind of abuse.
In fact, that leads
to a situation where people won't even go to the board meetings because they call it the director's dog and pony show.
And then we complain about apathy, huh?
A lot of people complain about apathy, but these people do not want to expose themselves to abuse, and you can't blame them. Shu, I have to bring up an interesting aspect of this. There was an election, and after the election, I wasn't involved. I had an election monitor do it, and because he kept an eye on the ballots, there wasn't any ballot box stuffing, nor were there fraudulent ballots put into the fray, The domineering president was unseated. And after the election, that evening and the next day, I had many, many calls from unit owners there that were crying on the phone thanking me, and that they were so relieved that now they can come out of their apartments without being harassed. It's really upsetting. And somebody
wow.
a lot of people say to me, well, you're prejudiced, you know, you're against the boards and so on and so forth. No, not really. I said, I'm just against abuse. I don't think that we have to suffer abuse in this United States.
No, and I've been hearing a lot about that, not just in associations, but that abuse since people in associations have been taking it, that abuse is sort of going out, and local municipal governments are now starting to emulate associations, and that's really cause for concern as well. The 25% of abuse, then 10% of the calls you get is abuse by managers as well. So the managers are doing essentially the same types of things that you were talking about.
Exactly.
And so that's 35% of all your calls have to do with abuse.
All the complaints, yeah.
That's a lot.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, those are the kind of people that call us. I mean, they're looking for somebody. How else they can have it stopped? You know, they feel that they have a source to assist them. I mean, an attorney can't help them. You know, they can't go to an attorney and say, stop this person from abusing me. He bangs on my door every day saying that my cat's in the window and he's not allowed to be in the window. You know, or that something's wrong, my light was on, or my car's parked improperly. You know, this kind of thing.
We have 2 minutes. What can we do? What should people do to prevent this, to put a stop to this?
Well, they have to get involved. They have to get the proper people in control, the right directors. And they have to seek support from the legislature. And of course, the legislature has to empower somebody to do it. And, of course, I'm in line here, but my power is still limited because I'm still a new agency. The Department of Business and Professional Regulation, their Division of Condominiums, is empowered to put a stop to it. But it hasn't been working. And the legislature, you know, the legislature is looking for someone to, you know, to assist them to get these things taken care of. They're just tired of hearing their constituents calling and saying, you know, I'm being killed here in my condominium, help me.
It sounds like Florida has finally found the right person for the job. Thank you so much, Virgil. I wish you all the very, very best. And I hope you'll come back and periodically and give us an update and continue to set an example for the rest of the country.
Okay. I wish I could have been more positive, but, you know, it is positive. We have gained. We have made a lot of success. People have become wiser. You know, the complaints are more poignant, and people know exactly what's going on, and they know exactly what they desire to achieve, and they want us to help them.
How big a staff do you have?
Okay, I'm up to 5 now. Well, 4 plus. I have one still waiting for approval. And by the way, she's multilingual, not only Spanish, but a lot of other languages. I'm bilingual, Bill's bilingual, and I hate to turn it into the UN, but we can take calls from anybody.
Well, that's what you need, because I think a lot of the abuses are against minorities, people who don't understand, and people the association believes does not know what their rights are. So thank you again, Virgil, all the very best, and I hope you will come back.
Okay, sure, thanks.
And I hope you will talk to us. For the rest of you, don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to be talking to another little Energizer bunny by the name of Jan Bergman, and you'll really enjoy meeting him. WBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and as promised in the first half, when we come back, you're going to meet the little Energizer bunny. He's not pink because his wife does not like pink, but he's got more energy and is more successful than the Energizer Bunny. Jan Bergman, thank you so much for joining us, Jan.
Well, thanks for having me, Sue.
You are the president of the Cyber Citizens for Justice in Florida. Your website is ccfj.net, correct?
ccfj.net, yes, that's correct.
And if you live in Florida and you're not a member of Cyber Citizens for Justice, you need to be. Because this gentleman has lobbied hard and is the one who managed to get the ombudsman in Florida. How, Jan, has it been working? I know you worked very hard to get this. Tell us how it's going. Has it met all your expectations?
I think we can be very happy. We knew that we will have a lot of problems. You know, the opposition is strong. But we are very happy about the work the Condo Ombudsman's Office is doing. We hear a lot of praise. We hear a lot from condo owners who are telling us, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is really great because we never knew where to turn to. But the down point of it is I hear from homeowners association members who say, why don't we have something like that? We need a place to go. We have the same problems as the condo owners. Why are we treated as citizens third class?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I asked Virgil, and he says, I don't want to start with that right now. He had his hands full with the condominium.
Understandable, so, but, you know, I don't have to be political correct. That's my advantage if I talk like this.
I hope you don't want to be politically correct. I think that's a big waste of money or time.
And that's not what I'm here for.
Do you have any idea how many homeowners live in homeowner associations? Do you have the stats?
There are no real stats. We try to get them according to all official information. There are no stats whatsoever. There is only a guess to be made, and the guess is it's about double the amount of condo owners, which would come up to more than 2 million.
So you've got over 2 million plus a million condo owners, so you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.5 million people.
You actually talk about a lot more people because you're talking here units.
Units, right? I'm sorry, you're right.
Because we don't forget most of these units house more than one person.
Yes,
so,
you're right.
You come up with quite a few million here in Florida. See, when I moved out of my homeowners association and moved out from away from St. Augustine, I did it because there was nothing else to get but a home and a homeowners association. So that shows you that in certain places there is nothing else to get. The industry is always talking about choices. Oh, don't move into it. In some locations, you can't buy anything else.
Yeah, I'm in one of those locations, and you're talking about you had to move about 60 miles away.
Yeah, to find a reasonable lot where I could finally do whatever I wanted, and even if my wife doesn't want it, where I could plant pink flamingos in my front yard.
We're going to have to make sure that you get a pink flamingo, Jan.
Let's make it red. I would like to stay married, please.
Well, you know, there's spray paint all over the place. We can accommodate that.
Well, you know, but let's get back to the business on hand. We heard from the condo ombudsman, and he gave us a real good picture about what is really happening. And as you know, our website is very active. We get an average of 250 hits on the homepage each day, which is an accurate number. And many of these people have questions, complaints, and so on. And one of them is always, why don't have homeowners in Florida not the protections condo owners are now getting? But condo owners are not really getting protection. We succeeded in creating the Office of the Ombudsman thanks to the help of some very good legislators led by House Representative Julio Rupina,
yeah,
who is so helpful you can't even describe it. But we need to expand. We need to have more reform. This can't go on. We have lots of abuses in associations. We will talk about it later. But talk about condos in the moment. You know, we have here in Florida the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. this department is actually charged with regulating condo associations, enforcing the laws, but so far they have failed. And that is actually the reason why the legislators were willing to take up our proposal of creating the Ombudsman's Office, because they were just plainly sick and tired of getting the calls from their constituents complaining that the DBPR is not doing anything to help them and something needs to be done. So that's it. We just got now a new secretary for the DBPR here in Florida, and so we are hoping things will change. She was advertised as a sharp cookie, as you say, and we are hoping she will do what she's supposed to do, and that she will finally see the writing on the wall before she sees more irate legislators in her office. Please don't forget, we had in the recent years three secretaries. All of them were, well, in normal words, they were canned. The official version is they resigned. And a division chief resigned as well because of all the problems in these condominiums. They failed because they kept working with the same department head. See, the secretary is a secretary. She's the head of the department. But you can, if you change them, but don't change the people who are doing the actual work, you're not changing anything. And these are the people who, in my opinion, really have to go, because they're not doing what they're supposed to. In many cases, they even have connections to the industry and to service providers, which are, in my opinion, much too close to comfort. For example, if an executive director is the brother of a leading partner of a law firm who's doing condominium work, you know there's something wrong. I'm not accusing anything of doing something wrong, but
you'd like to see
the picture alone is bad.
Yeah, there's an appearance of impropriety, whether there is impropriety or not.
And people get scared.
Yeah.
They complain to the DBPR and get a letter back from the DBPR signed with the same last name the letter from the law firm was signed with, saying you're doing wrong. So that's a no-no.
Wow.
In my opinion, it's a clear no-no, and we have more such cases, and there are lots of examples, and it's just the secretary has finally to realize there is something wrong. She can't just listen to the industry service providers telling her, oh, that are just a few disgruntled guys. It's not true. Everybody knows it.
How, Jan, let me ask you something before we move on. In a lot of places here in Virginia, for instance, when something comes up, all of a sudden you see CAI offering their services, and CAI members actually picking the people who are going to provide the oversight and still controlling that. Is that the situation down in Florida? For instance, do you have industry members coming in and saying, oh, we will, you know, we will help you and we will help you find a great secretary?
Well, sure they are. And you know, we know how well connected they are. You know, don't forget they have the money. Homeowners and condo owners for more than 20 years failed to do anything to help themselves. For many years there was nobody who lobbied in their favor in the legislature. So, you know, the laws and statutes were written the way the industry service providers wanted them written, and it shows. I mean, there are statutes for the service providers, for the managers, for the attorneys, against the owners. That's a very clear statement, and nobody can even contradict it. It's obvious.
So the fact that this office failed to do the job is understandable considering what happened. And so along comes CCFJ, and along comes the Energizer Bunny by the name of Jan. And Jan gets a lot of calls, and Jan goes to work, and Jan sort of lobbies in, push is for an ombudsman, and I know you've been trying to do this for a couple of years before it came through, are you still getting the same number of calls that you were getting before?
I can tell you we're getting a hell of a lot more.
You're getting more?
Yeah. See, we got this year on our website already more hits than in the first 4 years of our existence together. It's growing. My wife actually wants another telephone because my line is always busy. So I think that tells you what is going on there. And it grows, the demand grows. The problem is the people often are afraid to do something. I hear the same what Virgil told you before. People say, yeah, but you can't tell anybody I called you. You know, I'm afraid they will send me a violation letter. And, you know, you don't forget there is a lot of abuse going on. You know, we hear it all the time that attorneys for the association help the sitting board to discredit candidates, opponents who run against them. They're doing investigations, find out dirt, and the dirt is spilled at the next association meeting. This is, you know, it's a disgrace to our society what's happening. I'm sorry to say that, but it's really bad.
We're talking to Jan Bergman. He's president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, a Florida-based grassroots organization. Jan, you have some stories. You said that in the last week, some incidents or inquiries, if you will, the results of inquiries that have come to light. Do you want to share some of those stories with us?
And I sure would like to, because, you know, they're kind of, in a way, ridiculous if they wouldn't be so sad. You know, see, one association, almost known as association, had last week a budget meeting. According to the law, that had to be called. It's a membership meeting. So one of the owners dared to inquire why the budget, which was proposed, doesn't say anything about reserve funds. He said, we know there are some, and so why don't we see them, and what is going to happen? The president got up, screamed and yelled at that poor member and owner, and said, if he is not informed, this is a budget meeting, not a reserve fund meeting, so he showed up and sit down and don't disturb the meeting.
So this is part of the abuse that Virgil was talking
yes.
about. Okay.
What the actual truth behind it is, the board doesn't want to know that they spent nearly $100,000 of the reserve fund in legal fees and lost the lawsuit. You know, so sometimes screaming and yelling has a reason.
Yeah.
It's a cover-up.
Well, you know, any time that they don't want to show you or answer your questions, it is a cover-up. You know, when there's no reason not to withhold information, they're pretty happy to share it with you. So I guess the thing is, if you ask a question and you're not getting an answer, there's a reason for it, folks. Do something.
Oh, definitely, yes. You know, and, you know, we're talking about legal fees and costs. We have this week another, a board wants to hold this weekend a meeting, a board meeting to retroactively approve an unauthorized arbitration, which is going on for more than 1 year. The association is the attorney is desperately pushing for it, as you can imagine. And the arbitrator seems to be willing to go along with the cover-up. I mean, how can you retroactively approve an arbitration which is going on since more than a year?
The
money is spent. And, you know, the other side of the arbitration is another board member. And she was already told she can't participate at the board meeting because she's the party.
But and the rest of them are not, huh?
Yeah, but the president, who actually told the attorney to file for arbitration without asking the board or telling anybody, she is allowed to vote, according to attorney and herself.
Gee, I wonder why, Jan.
Yeah,
I
can tell you why, because otherwise she wouldn't get the majority of the board vote.
Well, the attorney wants to make sure that they know the outcome, and so they make sure that only the people that are going to vote with them have the authority to vote. That is something that happens quite often, isn't it?
Well, it happens a lot. And, you know, I'm being asked 2-3 times a week about recalls. And, you know, the funny thing is, I always thought, you know, they recall board members. You know, they don't like them or they do something wrong or whatever. You know, when you look behind it, quite a lot of these boards are recalled by their neighbors, not because of what they really do, but because of the actions of the managers and the attorneys who these boards are unwilling to dismiss. So mostly, if there isn't a successful recall, the first thing the new board is doing is firing attorney and manager. Happens in so many cases. And it shows that there is often the problem in the service provider, not so much in the board members. A lot of them are at fault as well, but they're uneducated. They listen to, in my opinion, sometimes I call it greedy advice because it makes money. And then there are the scapegoats who get recalled. So that is one of the reasons why I feel that the regulation has to go further, and as well, attorneys have to be stepped on their toes and not running around just making money without concern of the people they're supposed to represent.
I think that's an excellent point. I think you're right that managers and attorneys are a big underlying reason for a lot of the problems, because they allegedly provide the professional information to board members who come on and really don't know what they're doing. And, of course, their underlying goal is to line their own pockets. So it's not a very pretty picture, is it, Jan?
No, it's not. And you know, many of these complaints come from legal reasons. You know, not everybody who moves into a homeowners association has a degree as a lawyer. So we come here with common sense, hopefully, in most cases. And then we're told, oh, you can't do that legally. In cases, it's not even true. You know, I've seen opinions from attorneys who are totally off the wall. But they feel that they help the sitting board, and that's the people who sign their contracts.
Not CAI-affiliated attorneys, eh? We don't have to be politically correct on this show,
okay. Well, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
I know exactly.
Legally, things often don't make sense. I give you another example. There was an arbitration ruling. This ruling stated that a private board meeting, three directors met privately and decided on some contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The board meeting actually was illegal, but the decision made at this illegal meeting stand because it was a majority approval. You know, can you give me some common sense here? I don't understand it. You know,
if
something is illegal, it's illegal, and whatever you do during this illegal activity should be null and void.
It is null and void. It absolutely is null and void.
Yeah, but see, this is the rulings you get here, and then you say, hey, you know, no wonder we are all in trouble.
I know. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. You had another story that I kind of like, and this is a case, I think, of the tail wagging the dog, and this we see and hear about so often. It's about a manager telling a board member.
Yeah, what?
Go ahead.
That was another real funny one. A board member decided that she wanted some information. She wanted to look at the records because she felt there was something not right, and she asked, as a board member, you know, to see the records.
Mm-hmm.
While the manager, who obviously absolutely disliked this demand, got together with the president of the board And at the next official board meeting, the manager got up and made the announcement that from now on, this board member is being treated as a regular homeowner and not anymore as a board member and is not having any more access to association records. Now, and he quoted, he's doing that according to Florida Statute 720, the Homeowners Association Act. The funny part is, first, there's nothing to the, in this regard even close. And second, this statute claims that every homeowner has access to this public record. So, I mean, these managers, sometimes they totally go overboard. They forget they're the hired hands.
I know. This is the, and that's why I said that it's a tail wagging the dog. But homeowners should have access to just about every piece of paper that's in the office, except perhaps litigation, ongoing litigation, or contracts under bid. But otherwise, it's their money, it's their quality of life, it's their homes. It's, you know, what CAI will tell us is the best example of democracy up close and personal. But, you know, when board members are denied access to the information, where's the democracy?
There is none. And I mean, I know a case happened a few weeks back. The attorney wrote to a board president, please remove these records out of the office and keep it in your private unit so nobody will see and have access to these records.
Who said this?
An attorney, in writing.
An attorney told a board member to remove...
The board president.
Oh.
Oh, my.
Oh, why does that not surprise me?
Yeah, why? Because it's common. It's not the only case. You know, see, and we're talking about the problems. You know, here's another one. A management company hires the secretary of a board as employee. Some people ask, you know, don't you think it's a conflict of interest and, you know, shouldn't you resign, you know, because there are problems. And she comes back and says, no. The attorney of the association said, there's no conflict of interest. It's all fine and dandy. I can stay on as secretary and I can be the employee of the management company. Well, the problem really is that this association attorney is a very close relative to the owner of the management company. hello?
No conflict of interest there.
Oh, no. You know, and if I really hear and see these stories and see what the statements being made, you know, I sometimes figure these people are reading the fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm instead of the Florida statute. I mean, honestly.
What's next for CCFJ? What are you going to be working on this year, Jan?
We are working on a big bill for homeowners associations. We feel it's really time for homeowners associations to do something. And we want to get as well regulation for homeowners association. We want as well that the ombudsman's office is expanded to for homeowners associations because we feel it is really high time, it's overdue, that homeowners have a place to go to. You know, it's unbelievable when you're being told hire a private attorney.
Oh, you know, it's a contractual matter.
You know, yeah, we talked about, you know, having access to public records. I hear every week, 5-10 times, oh, they tell me I can't have access. So what you do? Sue in court, you know, for the minutes of the last board meeting. Well, the attorneys like it. I know one case where an attorney defended that at the cost of $10,000.
And they're protecting property values, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's only property values, you know. And then, the weird thing is, you know, our friends from CAI, you know, and we have as well here in Florida a group that's called CORE, the Community Association Leadership Lobby, which are as well financed by attorneys and which are run by attorneys, which are actually
taking
CAI
care
members.
Of their interests. Yes.
Right. You know, they say, oh, you know, these people are totally out of their minds. You know, the people in associations are, oh, they're so happy you wouldn't believe it. You know, they can't stop moving into these associations, you know. And I have seen all their surveys and polls they're publishing. But, interesting enough, if you go on their website, you can see some polls. And I give you just two examples.
Jan, we're out of time, but I hope you'll come back with more examples and more stories.
And there are a lot, I'm telling you.
I know there are.
It was nice being with you, and it was a lot of fun.
Thanks for joining us on The Commons today. Please join us every week, same time, same place. On The Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings closed in justice for HO. Arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, so tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
Amendment to law. WEDR. Cox Channel 37. Comcast Channel 27. Fairfax Cable and Internet Radio. WEDR.
You're listening to WEBR Fairfax Radio. If you like this show or have any comments or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call in the studio at 703-560-TALK. That's